You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Kind of writes it. I do.
Just like that, Lady Greta told me down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your bowls are dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flare out. Big net hook with only the right look. Lure in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide. Baba's going out of sight, even if it takes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner, cause I kinda like a bit.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning, rolling into the final hour of Real Talk Radio with Mr. Ronnie Green of A Fishing Story. How's it going over there, Ronnie?
It is going well. I am having a ball. So my fishing rods are in the truck. And, I found out the lake. I've been doing some research while we're on break.
No, I'm kidding. Well, you got to hit a few spots on the way home, right? I mean, that's just
like a waste of time if I come way out here and
part
not fish.
Of it.
Yes,
there's a few good fishing holes between here and Tampa.
Yes.
I know that for sure. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. So we were talking about the classic, and we were talking about some of the interviews that some of the folks that you were connected with, and some of the guys that you got to chat with a little bit more actually at the classic, but. What, you know, so, and even, you know, to me, it amazes me just hearing about their schedules, the schedules that these guys are on from being on the water. And we're talking about they start fishing what time in the morning, Ronnie?
Usually it's they got to be there and have their boats in the water probably by like 6 to 6:30.
Yeah.
And before that, while they're doing all that, waiting for the national anthem and some of the other preliminaries before launch, they're talking to the press.
Mm-hmm.
All while they're still getting some last-minute changes to gear and so on and so forth and trying to get their mental game together.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of mental
focus
to be able to push all those distractions out of the way and fish, you know, and not forget something, you know, because I have seen people forget some things. I forgot to put gas in the boat last night because I was out there talking to press and that kind of thing. So once they're finished, you know, with that, they do the weigh-in and right after the weigh-in, after they've done all that fishing and talking, they get to talk some more to a whole lot of press. They got to go through the press room. They get them a little snack and the press room, and they just go at them for another hour. So it gets pretty interesting.
And then they get a few hours of sleep, and then it's the same thing the next day.
Same thing the next day.
So it's 2 days of fishing, right?
Three total.
Three total, okay.
Mm-hmm. And 2 days of before they decide, you know, the final folks. And you'll have an idea who's going to get. Usually the top five, you'll kind of have an idea of who you think will win.
Yeah.
And I felt like I saw that the very first day.
Really?
It was just one of those, you know, as an athlete's perspective of focus. When I saw Hank and I talked to him, I was like, man, this dude's on a different plane right now mentally.
Mm-hmm.
That was the mental part that I saw.
Which I bet you can really appreciate being, I think when you're in sports overall, whether it's fishing, whether it's running, whether it's any other kind of sport, so much of it is mental.
Mental. Yes.
I know from running a few half marathons you know, you get towards the end and it just really becomes a mental game. So I would imagine that a lot of that, I mean, totally, you've got to stay 100% focused on what it is that's going on in that particular, you know, that particular situation. And it's your one opportunity, I'm sure, for a lot of these guys.
Yes.
They've worked so hard to get there.
Yes. And it is literally.
And hopefully we'll see more ladies.
Yes, I think we will.
The
There's some ladies out there doing really well. Keep in mind, Christy Bradley, she's a beast. She's been fishing opens for a little bit, and I think she's got like 12th or something like that on the James River. But now she's doing it a lot more frequently. Mm-hmm. She's a part of the Bass Pro team. Was there at the Classic with her, and she
That's
is a
awesome.
Stick. I fished against her, and usually I'm like, well, at least I'm not getting first today because I know you're here, is what I always tell her, because she's a stick. And there's some other good anglers out there that are coming up, and I believe it is Melinda Mize. She's a stick as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. Anastasia Patterson is coming up, and some good sticks out there that are really setting the. And of course, don't forget Midwest Fisher Girl.
Yeah, definitely.
Do not count her out.
No. She's going to be a force to contend
with.
And you were talking about Christy Bradley and fishing the James River.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the James River is not an easy fishery.
No, it is a tidal fishery.
For folks that are used to fishing mm-hmm. lakes and reservoirs, then you get into the James River, it's tidal.
It's a different ball game.
And so for sure.
And a lot of people don't know how to fish tidal fisheries because it's like fishing on the saltwater side, except with the in fresh water.
Right.
With the tide change and whatnot, people get stuck because they may have been catching fish in this one area. The tide goes out, and now your fish are all gone, and then you still running in this area, and you might get beached in that area. You just don't know. So it takes some very good planning and strategic understanding of where you go for your next move, and she had it figured out. I mean, I think the first day she was, like, in the top 10, and pretty much just stayed in that area. I mean, she was smacking them. And you're fishing against the best in the world.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. So, and that's what I love about fishing. Fish don't care what you look like. They just down below eating whatever looks good to them.
Amen to that. We just got a text that came through from our future captain, Bradley Finch. He is our young angler. He calls and gives a report usually every week, and obviously this week he can't, but he wanted to text in. He said he's been catching lots of snook lately on live bait, and he also wants to wish all of the fathers out there a happy Father's Day, especially his dad, because of all the lessons he taught Bradley and how much he does for Bradley.
That's
so
awesome.
Yes, happy Father's Day to Robert and all the fathers out there. Get your dad out on the water this weekend. Give him a break from, you know, having to do everything, and take him fishing. Get him out there and spend some time with him. So hopefully we'll see some families out there on the water tomorrow.
I'll say happy Father's Day to my father, Ralph Green Sr. in San Antonio, Texas. And whenever he calls me, he'll call me a happy Father's Day, old man. Well, I want to say happy Father's Day, old man. My dad is an amazing man, one of the hardest working men I have ever met in my life. This man is a grinder. But remember I talked to you about earlier how kids could care less about what you say. They just watch what you do. Well, we've watched our dad work really hard, and we've all passed it on to our kids. And the hard work comes from my dad. The sophistication in communication and the intelligence, I think, comes from my mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a perfect setup. To have kids, and then, you know, everything he's taught us, even about how to be a man, because not everybody knows how to be a man, if that makes sense. We watched him
mm-hmm.
versus listened to him, and I'm so proud to say that I'm a descendant from his genes, you know, my dad, Ralph.
And he's in San Antonio still, and What was his profession? What did he do? What do you guys?
My dad
up?
Actually worked for Western Electric.
Okay,
and he was also a pastor at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had what is a side hustles before they were popular nowadays. He also had a pie business. He also had some other businesses. He just was all about hard work.
Yeah,
honest day's work, finding a way to make sure. That he took
he had
care
those
of his
multiple
kids.
Streams of income
yes,
going.
He did.
Yeah, he knew the secret.
Yeah, he
knew
did.
The secret.
He did. And I think we all got a little bit of it, and all of us. And so, me and my brothers and sisters, we laugh about it all the time.
Because you've got that entrepreneurial mindset too, where you're always thinking about what's the next thing?
The next thing.
What's the next thing?
That's my dad.
Yeah.
That's him.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully, you'll get a chance to. To visit him. Actually, you were in Texas, weren't you?
Yes.
Seeing your daughter for a track meet. So did you get a chance to
I spent some time with
him?
And usually me
That's
and
great.
My dad, when we meet up, it's going to be at a Mexican restaurant and a hole in the wall, and we going to eat till they roll us out of there, okay? But, no, we had a ball and spending time, and my dad's a clown, too, and I get a lot of that from it. Most of the people in my family are just clowns. And so some of the other family got together, and we just clowned and laughed and had a good time. And as you're getting older, and you're starting to see a little bit of the age and the deliberate movements, but at the end of the day, he still say, boy, I still can go out there and outrun you. I know I can.
Because he used to fish, too, because he first took you fishing.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And that's what I appreciate about him. He didn't always feel like he could master some things.
Yeah.
But he felt like, I'm still going to try it. He never had limits. If he felt like he can do it and nobody, and wasn't against the law,
yeah,
it was legal, he would do it. And fishing was something he took his boys to do. Not all of us took in, you know, stayed with it. Me and my younger brother, I did it. My oldest brother's like, I want no part of it. I'll just buy my fish at the store. That's exactly what he said. So
it didn't carry the love of fishing didn't carry across to everyone in your family.
No, it never does. And it's always funny to laugh about it because we tease about it all the time.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because, you know, my grandfather took my brother and I both fishing when we were young.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother really got into hunting. Hunting is his thing.
Wow.
Because my grandpa was a big outdoorsman. He used to fish. He used to hunt.
Uh-huh.
He'd take us both fishing. Never took me hunting, but he, you know, my brother would go hunting with my grandfather and my dad, and that was my brother's thing. He gravitated to hunting. Mm. I gravitated to fishing. And I know people will ask me, they're like, oh, but do you hunt? And it's like, no, I don't. I mean, I just, if I can be out on the water fishing, that's like you can here in Florida every day of the year, with the exception of, you know, when we've got weather, I want to be out there fishing as much as I possibly can. So I respect his love of hunting and the outdoors in that way. But I love my fishing. And I think it's funny just how we both kind of gravitated to different things. But
that's funny.
Yeah.
And that's the way all the kids are. I mean, my boys, I take them fishing all the time. They're like, Dad, are we done yet? My daughter, she's like, Dad, so can we go to another spot? I think these fish are all beat up. And she is the stick in the family. Matter of fact, when she came down, her and my son, it's always been her trademark to catch the first fish. Well, not only did she catch the first fish, she caught the first two and then talked trash.
Yeah, Lauren.
I was like, okay. And then got my son fired up. So I was real quiet. Dad was quiet on the boat, and them two were going at it. And she was like, well, what you got, Ryan? Boom. When you ain't got nothing, if you can't catch them like this. And I was like, listen to this. And I'm just laughing. It's always good.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So, Ronnie, we have a special segment that we do on this show. I know Rick's busy on the phone lines trying to explain to people, you know, about the fact that we're foregoing the phones today for the text lines. But we do a special segment called Useless Information.
Ooh.
And usually it's about, you know, random things, but today we have a special edition of Useless Information that's going to be focused on kind of track and field.
Ooh.
So we'll see what you know, this will kind of apply to you. We'll see what you think here.
Do I need
to
stretch?
Are you ready, Rick?
I think I am. I was just explaining to yet another caller on why we couldn't take phone calls, so I apologize.
I know you've been tied up back
hold
there.
Hold on 1 second. Let me just make
but
sure.
But it's good to know the phones are ringing because it means people are finding us on the new channels, on the new stations.
All right, Ronnie, brace yourself.
Uh-oh.
Dun-da-da!
I've grown tired of you. What's wrong with you? You are useless.
Useless.
And now from the world's most outstanding, is it outstanding? I think it's outstanding, isn't it? Well, we changed books recently, but.
We did. We'll cut you some slack, Rick, because
okay,
to be honest, I didn't write it down and I don't know.
From the world's most outstanding book of useless information, here's your host and mine, Captain Debbie Hansen with Useless Information.
And this is the Catch Me If You Can edition of Useless Information.
Fantastic.
So, today, the first bit of useless information is, during a 100-meter race, a top sprinter makes contact with the ground only 40-some times.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing
that
if
is.
You think about
wow.
it.
Wow.
Wow.
So Rick, if you did not know, yeah. Ronnie was an All-American sprinter.
I heard that earlier in the show.
At Texas Tech University.
Yes.
So if you were running a 100-meter race,
wow.
does that sound pretty
right.
accurate?
Because we spend a lot of time in the air.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're basically flying, right?
40 okay. times. And let's see, so 100 meters is like 380 some feet, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Wow.
That is amazing.
And you're
amazing.
Only coming in contact Never with the ground that. 40 some times.
That's pretty cool.
All right. So second piece of useless information. The first man to run the 4-minute mile, England's Roger Bannister, held the world record title for only 46 days before Australian John Landy knocked 1.4 seconds off of his time on June 21st, 1954.
Wow.
See, to me, that's 4-minute mile. Holy smokes.
That's moving. Back in the day.
Back in the day.
And they're breaking it still. I mean, constantly. That mile and then that 1,500 meters, they're just constantly breaking it.
What's the average of people if they're... What's the average time for a mile these days?
Oh,
do you know?
I know it's a sub-4.
Sub-4.
Sub-4 and then some.
That's crazy fast. That's crazy fast.
It is.
We could do it, right, Rick?
Oh, yeah, right.
Piece of cake.
I just polished off a bunch of breakfast sandwiches. I'm ready to go. Let's go run a mile, everybody.
All right, and now, last but not least, the discus throw is the only track and field event for which a world record has never been set in Olympic competition.
Wow. Huh.
That I found really interesting.
That
so in other
really
words, any world records that have been made for the discus throw have occurred outside of the Olympics. And I don't know what the record is because I didn't look it up, but it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, I usually
pretty amazing.
Am running away from that area when they're throwing
right.
that thing. So
you don't get hit by a discus.
I mean, you think of the Olympics as the best of the best, right?
Yeah.
So
you do.
Apparently, though, maybe the pressure or whatever, I don't know. Interesting.
It's probably.
Probably. Mental. I thought that was, we're talking about the mental game. That could have
there
something to
is.
Do with it right there. Yeah, for sure. So... Yeah, so you've got, what do you have coming up in the next couple of weeks, Ronnie? You've got
we'll be shooting
more
filming. Filming a show with Tim and Lynn Johnson. Tim is a musician. He's a gospel musician that's played in many different venues and several albums with like Israel Houghton and some of these other, John P. Key, some of these other gospel artists, and known him for years.
Yeah.
Almost like a brother kind of thing. But he lost his son probably about 2.5 years ago to suicide. And he's
going to
walk us through that day and what that was like. And then about awareness, how we can be more aware of seeing the signs. Just when you think you know something, you'll find out that you may not have known as much or you weren't paying attention. So he's going to educate us as well. So it'll be an interesting story, but we'll always catch a lot of good fish because they're all fun to catch.
Yeah. You know? I think it's probably a pretty relevant message, too, for these times because we all know people have been going through a lot the past year.
Yeah.
And it is. It's important to make sure people are kind of paying attention to their crew and, paying close attention to the signs of somebody who's going through some of those struggles. So, well, we'll definitely look forward to staying tuned to that. And then getting back to the classic, so you we got 2 minutes, Rick, coming up on a break? All right. Well, we only have 2 minutes, but what do you think was, I mean, you're going to the classic. I know we talked about some of the experiences and what these guys go through to get there, but, you know, on the last day when they're doing that weigh-in and they make the big announcement about the winner, I mean, you're talking about, give us a visual of what goes on. I mean, you're packed into...
Imagine just this huge concert at a big arena, and then the main artist comes out, and there's smoke, and there's, you know, all sorts of, you know, things going on, and it's a big production, and then you send this boat coming around, and all the anticipation of the weigh-in, and then you have the two anglers, the final two anglers, and once the classic champion is crowned, then next you know, the confetti and everything else comes out of the air, shot all over the place, and they're holding up that trophy, and here comes that family. the rest of their family that has supported them all
the whole way
year.
Through. Yeah.
It is a beautiful, beautiful setup. And if you're there, you will understand and feel the emotion because you feel everything that they have gone through.
Yep. And that was Hank's first win.
Second.
His second win.
Back
okay.
to back.
And that's so he won last year.
Yes.
Wow.
On Lake Gunnersville. The guy has been, and you want to talk about a jerkbait monster. Yeah, you know, Hank is some kind of fisherman. He's come close for many years, and he has been in positions, you know, prior to the Classic where he wasn't sure if he wanted to do it anymore,
mm-hmm.
if he wanted to put his family through this anymore. And most people, when you go through something in life, when you're at that place where you want to give up,
yeah,
push a little bit more because there's something big on the horizons. You know, just like what I tell people about my show, when I first told a lot of my friends about it, I was laughed at. And so my thinking is, if your vision is as big as you think it is and you don't get laughed at,
it's not big enough.
There you go.
All right, on that note, we're going to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands. Sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my special guest co-host, Mr. Ronnie Green. Hey, Ronnie.
Here.
I cannot thank you enough for being here this morning. We've had such great conversation.
Oh, yeah.
It's been fantastic. And I know we actually just had a text come through, specific question for you from our regular texter, Clam Pass. We give them nicknames. The Sheeman and Shepherd Show, the afternoon sports show, gives a lot of our texters nicknames. But he wants to know, has Ronnie ever fished the stage tournament where it's broken down into periods where quantity determines your weight? Was very entertaining to watch and very stressful for the anglers.
Is he referring to MLF?
I was wondering if he was talking about Major League Fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have not, but I've been invited to fish a few of those. It's really difficult because I fish the Bassmaster side.
Right.
But I think it's all good fishing styles and fishing competition styles. I love it. And I love watching it. It's very entertaining. But I've been just a Bassmaster type that's been that way for a long time. And maybe I'm a little bit old school and I kind of stick to what I know. But I'm always open to something new. But I like where I'm at when I'm talking about fishing. Bassmaster is where I like to be.
Yeah. And Major League Fishing, they just have a different format in the respect that they don't bring the fish to weigh in.
No.
Yeah.
They don't bring the fish to weigh in. And there's something to say about it. Obviously, there's so many different schools of thought as it relates to conservation.
Right.
But on the other side, you got to think about the fans as well. So I think having the interaction with the fans and having them see what you're catching and, you know, that close up. There's something about that I really like, the fan interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you get that necessarily with the MLF side. Although it's great, it's just not something that the fans always like.
Mm-hmm. Because going back, how many years, how many classics, what was the number on this Bassmaster Classic?
I forget. What was the number?
40 or 50 years,
yeah,
right?
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up, but yeah. So over, I mean, you're talking about
a
tradition. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then our texter Harry Carey wants to know. He said, actually, he just wanted to say that advice that was given about perseverance and keep pushing when you want to quit was fantastic. My boys were in the car with me and heard that. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Harry Carey, for texting in. And that's really what it's about, right? No matter what we're doing out there, because we've all faced that adversity.
And that's the thing. That's the story of my life. And I've come to realize that when I'm at my wit's end with anything, literally at my breaking point, I cannot do this anymore. Even with my dad, Dad, I can't do it anymore. And he's pushing us hard, or friends, or whatever it may be, corporate America, your job, your business, or even a marriage, whatever it may be, when you're at your wit's end, always know that's the last stop for something to keep you from getting to that big prize. And so just push just a little bit more, because you're right there at the big breaking point.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's what you were saying earlier, where we left off before the last break, about basically, if your dreams aren't big enough, if they're not scaring you, they're not big enough. It's so true. And, you know, making the career switch like you did, like I did, it's taking a big, huge leap of faith. And I'm going to tell you, I'm sure it was for you too, but for the first 2 years after I took that leap of faith and made the change, it was like, oh gosh, what did I do? But if you stay the course,
right,
and you keep your integrity and you just keep pushing through, because trust me, there have been I've run up against plenty of opposition out there.
Oh, yes.
And I know you have, because we were just talking about this on break. There's always going to be somebody that doesn't believe in what you're doing, the way you do it, your goals. You know, they don't think you're worthy of this or of that. You know what, really? Push all that aside. Don't listen to it. You got to focus on just being your authentic you. And, you know, right? I know it's hard. These days and times, it's like there's a lot out there on social media. There's a lot of, you know, people now that are, you know, I mean, a lot of these people want to get out there and they're YouTube stars. And that's great. That's a different, you know, that's just a different business model than what a lot of us are trying to do here if we're fishing professionally, you know, for a living. Some of it's media, and some of it is either you're fishing as a professional guide, you're fishing as a professional angler in tournaments. It's just a whole different aspect of it.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think about is to be authentically me. When I think about my vision, I talk to you about how a lot of this, the catalyst was my great-grandmother.
Yeah.
So I feel like that I'm protecting her legacy when I was putting out the show and doing the show. Now, when I started the show, there were so many people around me that had ideas. No, you need to do it like this. You need to do this. You need, and unfortunately, I stuck to my guns because I believe in what I believe. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm firm. I'm fair. And oh, by the way, I definitely like to have fun. So, but at the end of the day, the firm side, which is relates to the military discipline, not everybody's ready for. And so people don't usually like to be around that. They like to be around, you know, I just like the fun part.
Right.
You got to take it all.
But when you're doing this as a career and your livelihood depends on it, there's a time to be serious and there's a time to get down to business. And you got to keep that overall vision in mind. And for your integrity, know where you're going.
Exactly. Because people will try to
stay the course.
Yes, stay the course. How many people can I name that's come to me and has, you know, contracted me to do some work with me on the show and they want to change everything? And it's just the way it is. You got to know what you know that you know. And I even go as far as when I first started, it was a 28-page business plan. That's where I come from. When I did the show, knowing every aspect of what I knew in the business side to create this show. So whenever I'm in doubt, I just refer to that so-called manual
Yep.
of where I'm going.
Because you're in how many seasons of the show now?
We're on
fourth or fifth, right?
It's fourth to fifth year. Fifth year.
Okay.
But ninth season.
Ninth season.
Yeah. So it's just been amazing.
So you put out how many episodes every year, Ronnie?
Right at 13.
13 episodes.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of content. And
yeah.
Each show, we literally, after filming, could have three shows. You know, we got so much content. But I think it's important to have all that information because, you know, it's our product and we enjoy doing it, but we listen to our audience. And our audience keeps telling us through the ratings and then through the awards that this is what.
Yeah, you've won 8 Telly Awards, which is phenomenal. So congratulations on that for the show. And how, Ronnie, generally, how are you finding the folks that you're having on your show? So when you are out there and you're getting ready to prepare for another season, how do you determine who you're going to have on the show as a guest?
Is there several methods? I'd like to say I would be the be-all, end-all. But what we do is we'll get a lot of people write in mm-hmm. with their story. Then we'll come before the board and everyone talks about it. So it's not just from one perspective.
Right.
And everybody can bring something to the table and we decide this is going to be a good guest. And we all use that same manual knowing this is what the audience likes to see.
Yep.
And so if we stick to that, we usually are right on the money and it always fares out to be a really good, you know, show.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got people on the show who have a lot of fishing experience, some people who have no fishing experience,
right.
and everything in between.
Yes.
So there's a lot of diversity, not only in the personalities, but just, because really, it's about so much more than just the fishing.
Yes, it
which is. Which is the awesome part about it. I know we've only got another couple minutes and we have to head off to another break, but we got a great text from Captain Paul out on Sanibel. He said, 90% of life's gains come in the last 10% of your efforts. Put your head down and push through to the finish line.
Man.
Amen, Paul.
I love
Amen.
That.
Amen. That's a great, great message.
Bam. That is on the money. Woo!
Yep. And then Captain Rob texted in and said, the best guides are business people that can find fish. Yes, Captain Rob. And be
That's
entertainers,
right.
which I know you know, because
right.
not every day is going to be a great bite out there.
No.
So you better make sure you can keep your people entertained in the meantime. And then Captain Greg Stamper sent us a text message. He said, great morning, Debbie and Ronnie. Great bite this morning. Over 40 trout in the last Ooh. Hour. Heading off to catch some big snook next. Other than that, it's been all about the tarpon this week. Tight lines and put the croissant. Rick gets that phone fixed. I think what he meant to say is put the croissant down, Rick, and get the phone fixed.
Yeah, he did try calling in. He must not have been aware. And that's the first thing he said. He goes, put those croissants down and answer the phone. Well, I'm trying to fix the phones now.
Oh, my God.
All right, we got to head off to another break, don't we?
Yes,
All
let's
right.
go.
You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
Family had a cabin on Indian Lake. We'd drive up on Fridays, get there by 8.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my special guest co-host, Mr. Ronnie Green from the TV show A Fishing Story. We are rounding out the last 10 minutes of the show. Can you even believe it, Ronnie?
I can't. I was just telling you. I was like, hold on, this has only been an hour. What are you talking about?
Bam! Like... 3 hours later. Steal your term. Bam! Here we are
yes.
in the final 10 minutes. So, you know, You've been a huge inspiration to me and so many people out there. And I want to make sure that we leave before we close out the show today, just with a few suggestions, a few tips of words of wisdom and guidance, let's just say, for the next generation who's out there, they're thinking about getting involved maybe with tournament fishing, or maybe they want a job in the industry. Ronnie, what would you say to the next generation of anglers that's up and coming?
First of all, be authentic to yourself. And when you are authentic to yourself, nothing around you will change what you want to do. And what I mean by that is people are going to come along and tell you, you need to try this and do this like this. Well, this person does this on YouTube. This person does this on TV. This person does this on social media. But if that's not you, don't do it. Be authentically you, and you will never go wrong. And take it from me. I have some experiences where people tell me, and when you do your show, you need to do it like this. And oh, by the way, no one's ever done a show like that, Ronnie. I don't think it'll work. No one's ever such and such. And then you had the people that laugh at you. All of that is fuel and has been fuel from day one for me, because my whole focus has been to make sure that I get the message out on how my great-grandmother has influenced my life in fishing. And now I can inspire some others to tell their story on my show.
Yeah. And do you feel like there is sort of a perception out there of, well, to make it or to become someone in the fishing industry is easy, or to get out there every day and fish for a living or fish tournaments is easy?
It is. And then let me tell you why. Social media is, it's a two-edged sword. It's fantastic. It does a lot of great things as far as, and people are advertising on social media and doing well. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that is the perception of what reality is for some folks. Some people are not able to send it through their own filter and understand that that is not reality. That is a created reality that has been edited to look like a certain thing and consistently saying the same thing so that people think this about that person. But at the end of the day, that makes things sometimes look easy, i.e. bass fishing. As a professional, you got to give it all up if you want to be a professional bass fisherman. And that's a lot. And if you really want it that bad, there's a lot you got to put into it. But I'd highly recommend anyone that's a professional bass fisherman get an education first, because what that education is going to do is going to help you to navigate the business side. And any professional bass fisherman that has done well as a fisherman will tell you the most tricky, the trickiest part of the industry is the business side. Mm-hmm. And some of them weren't equipped and still not equipped to handle the business side because they just don't have the skill sets. Well, that's what an education will do. So I highly recommend that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about advice for first time tournament anglers? How to get into, like, how, if somebody wants to eventually start fishing in BASS or FLW, where is a good place for them to get information and get started?
I personally think you should find a local tournament. There is the ABAs, there's the BFLs, and there's some other smaller tournaments. And before you get into the front of the boat, even if you have a boat already, do the co-angler thing. And what that does, it's not necessarily saying you're a less of a fisherman, but it's going to teach you about that particular industry or tournament fishing. So I did the same thing, not so much because I was not ready for the front of the boat or this, that, and the other. No, it was all about just learning what goes on. It's a lot to navigate in tournament fishing. Well, I know how to fish. Yeah, I'm sure you know how to fish.
Yeah.
But that may not be the place you need to go right away. Mm-hmm. And once you learn all the other aspects of it, because there's a lot of different things going on, a lot of different moving parts, then you can go to the front of the boat with confidence because you can already fish. You already know how to fish, but you need to learn the other aspects of the professional fishing side.
I think that's such great advice, because I feel as if even if we weren't already before an instant gratification society, it's become even more so these days. And people have this expectation of, I'm going to go out there on the water every day and I'm going to catch these monster fish, because they're seeing the highlight reels on social media, and they're seeing things on TV. And being that you're the host of a TV show, you know firsthand, there are times when you go out there and you just crush them and you have an amazing day. But that doesn't happen all of the time.
It doesn't. And I can name, I've seen it, and I know several. There are people online right now that have gotten a huge following because they hold up five big bass every day and it looks like they can really fish. But you ask them, hey, why don't you fish tournaments, because you're promoting yourself as a professional fisherman. And, oh, no, I don't like to do tournaments, or I like to do these 10-people tournaments or 10-boat tournaments. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with it, but I think it's also creating the narrative that they're a superstar fisherman because they can hold up fish. Any bass fisherman or fisherman in general can hold up all the catch that they catch in a given day, the five largest, or over 3 or 4 days. So it's that whole perception that you can create, which creates a narrative. But if you really want to know the truth about a professional fisherman, put them in a position to fish a tournament that has more than 50 to 60 boats, and you'll find out what your skill sets really are like.
Oh, heck yeah. And I remember, I know we've only got a couple minutes before we close out the show, but I remember fishing with you when we were filming, and you had me up there working the trolling motor, and you wanted me backing down your boat, and I'm like, oh, geez, I got the, I'm used to backing down a little 15-foot boat in my Jeep. Ronnie's got this, sweet tricked out, bass boat, and oh my gosh, talk about the pressure. But you know what, you're right, and here's the thing. Fishing your local pond is totally different than getting out on a major waterway and having to stay on those fish and pattern those fish on a consistent basis.
Yes.
There are so many factors that play into decoding a waterway and breaking it down. And I mean, that's what I love about it. It's always just a tremendous learning experience.
And especially when you have to go out of the state of Florida. Florida has its own methodology for catching fish because there's such a so many shallow lakes and lots of grass. But if you notice, if you look at any fisherman or professional bass fisherman that has fished here all their life, then they have to leave and go outside of the state to go fish. They can crash and burn pretty quick because they've gotten comfortable and they haven't pushed yourself.
Yep.
It's almost like coaching yourself. If you coach yourself,
get out of that comfort zone.
Yeah, you're usually going to take the easy route. That's the reason why people have professional trainers, because even though they may be in good shape, the trainer is going to take it to a different level. And they're going to find some thresholds that you didn't know you had. And I think that's what professional bass fishing, you have to do. Push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And that's how you grow.
Great insight. Great insight. Hard to believe it is that time. We gotta go. Thank you, Rick Church, the director of the show, for pressing the buttons and screening the calls that, sort of screening the calls this morning. Thank you so much, Ronnie, for being here this morning. It was such a pleasure having you. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Absolutely.
Remember to share your experiences, share your stories, and get someone new out on the water. Tight lines all. We'll be back next Saturday. Same place, same time.
I'm sorry it's ended, oh, it's sad, but it's true, honey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.